This is Drive Through Radio on AM 790. Call Paul and John Zangari now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. Drive Through Radio with Paul and John Zangari on your station for talking business, AM 790.
Good morning. Welcome to Drive Through Radio. It's Car Care for You right here on AM 790. Well, Adam's off. We mentioned last week, Driver's Ed. There's basketball. Oh. He's got some crazy weekends ahead. So we're going to have to soldier on without him. But I am his old man, Paul Zangari. And this is my little brother, John.
How you doing, Paul? I think we'll manage.
Well, I guess so, especially because we've got Brett Ferruccio here with us. Hey, Brett.
Well, I'm no Adam.
Well, no.
I'm taller than Adam is, actually.
Yes, but
by
that's...
what, an inch, two?
Maybe. Well, how tall is he?
6'2".
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm a little over 6'3". So
there you go. All right.
He'll probably sprout right past me, though, I'm sure.
Give him time.
Yeah, give him time. He hasn't graduated high school yet.
At any rate, yeah, we are here to talk about cars with you. And look, if you have any kind of a car care concern, this is your opportunity to not just get it off your chest, but actually probably get some useful information.
You know what? Or also help you talk to your technician so that you give them the right idea of what you think is going on. Not so much how to fix it.
Exactly. Because it is amazing how many times people get into trouble trying to get information to their technician and speaking a different language and winding up costing themselves some extra money. So we've got phone numbers, and, you know, Jim in Exeter didn't even need us to tell him.
Because
we've got that recording that Dave has at the beginning of the show with the phone number. So
true.
You heard that. But, yeah, the numbers are 437-5000 and 888-345-0790. And when someone is this anxious to figure something out automotive or at least talk about it, we don't want to keep them waiting. So in Exeter, Jim, you are on Drive Through Radio. Hi there.
Yeah, beautiful. Love your show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I have a 68 Corvette, and I've had it registered for 50 years. Just got inspected this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it came with an aluminum radiator.
Yep.
And the owner's manual said you're supposed to, you know, flush it every couple of years. And, of course, I didn't do that. And the Prestone clogged it up, and I got a copper radiator.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they make aluminum ones now, so I'm just wondering whether I could put the aluminum one in and then use the new orange stuff, and would that solve the problem of having to flush the...
Well, I don't know about that, but as far as the compatibility...
No.
Well, about the compatibility, almost everything out there today has an aluminum radiator, and the orange stuff works
but
with it.
The quick answer is no, and by that I mean, yes, you should flush out the radiator every so often.
Yep.
Now... will it have to be as often as they suggested back then? I'm going to say no with today's modern antifreeze.
Right.
But remember back then, you were putting what I would call fits-all antifreeze in a car with an aluminum radiator where most cars did not.
Yeah, because copper was really common in that era. And Corvettes, in fact, Brad's 63...
Copper and brass.
Yeah, Brad's 63 had an aluminum radiator, which was quite unusual back in the era
when we were in high school. I think they started in 63 with the aluminum radiator.
When the Stingray came out.
Yeah.
That's a possibility.
And so, a couple of things. You don't have to have an aluminum radiator if the... copper radiator you have in there is a big enough capacity. And when I say that, you know, it's more than just how much water does it hold. Can it get rid of the heat as well as the aluminum radiator, which means it has to be thicker and heavier and more volume.
Yeah.
But the new stuff should be no problem for it.
Right. The only thing is, I think, Jim, you were asking about clearing the clogs. And, you know, by the way, is your radiator aluminum with plastic end caps?
No, not the original was all aluminum.
Right, right.
And I think the reproduction for the car shows is all, you know, it's exactly.
Right, for the ones that have to look like they did back then. But then they're the functional equivalents. And a lot of times what they do, in fact, the way most of them are made today, is they are aluminum, the end caps are plastic, the end caps are held with these tabs that can be bent out of the way. And once you've taken those end caps off, you can actually look into the tubes that the water passes through and essentially, to oversimplify, a big pipe cleaner going through those tubes.
What was a common service on radiators back when we started out playing with cars was what they call rodding the radiator.
Right. Not rotting, but rodding. Yes.
They unsolder the end covers and shove a rod, which was supposed to be the correct size, and it was a flat rod in a lot of cases if it had a flat tube fin drain.
Well, that's more of a radiator shop, and there's not many of those left anymore.
You are correct. They're uncommon now.
I will make a suggestion that you try somebody near you or somebody you deal with or whoever works on your car or helps you out if they have any idea. But there's another place, and I'm only saying this because they did something that I had a hard time finding somebody to do, and they boiled out a gas tank. Mm-hmm. So if somebody boils out gas tanks, they might still be doing some of those old services.
But that's the type of technology that you associate with the old copper fin radiators, copper brass radiators.
Well, I was going more in the direction of whether or not the new orange stuff would affect, like, the water pump and the things that was set up for
No, that's okay.
I mean, Prestone.
Yeah, the orange stuff is fine with the type of cooling system you have.
Yeah.
So I kind of like the aluminum because it came with an overflow, which I don't have with the copper.
Uh-huh.
So, it'd be a closed system. Yeah. And the other one just kind of blows the coolant out.
Well, here's what you can do with and you can experiment with this. If you take a coolant recovery radiator cap, and that's the kind with a rubber gasket around the outside of it, and, they all have the small rubber gasket in the middle, and then the coolant recovery ones have the rubber gasket around the outside as well. And you put in a coolant recovery bottle and fill that radiator all the way to the top and then close it off and put some fluid in the bottle, mark it, and watch the level. As the car gets hot, the level should go up in that bottle, and you don't fill the recovery bottle all the way. The coolant recovery bottle should go up as it gets hot and should go down as it's cold. And then when the radiator is stone cold, you open it up and take a look inside. It should be full right to the top.
And the nice thing about that is it helps slow down the process of deterioration inside the system.
Yeah, it also keeps the groundwater cleaner, too.
That's a good point. So Jim, you can use this stuff as the short answer now that we've given you the long one. All right?
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call, and good luck. Good luck, and enjoy that vet. Hey, I'm just looking at the time. It's a little bit early for our break, but it's close enough.
Do you know what? The best year of Corvette to have?
What's that?
Any of them.
I got some favorites, but I'll drink to that. A couple of things that are coming up. One of them, John, I believe hell has frozen over.
Yes. Oh, good to know.
Yes,
you can do a lot of things
yeah,
now.
Yeah, you can walk right across it. Yeah. No, because I think that something in the news this week would have you agreeing with the ACLU.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
You know what they did? They sent out a letter to the police departments in the state pointing out to them that ticket quotas are illegal in Rhode Island.
What is that, like 48 out of 50 states?
Well, I don't know. But
At
least in this one, because Channel 10 had run a story about a department that was, getting federal money for a quote-unquote enhanced highway safety program, and that program came with the string that there had to be interactions with motorists, a certain number of interactions, and I guess someone took that as meaning tickets, but no, it could be bawling someone out, But
an interaction is just a couple of people saying a few words to each other.
Yeah, yeah. But at any rate, it seemed to have come out as tickets, and no. You do not have minimum numbers of tickets. You do not have ticket quotas. Also, one thing we're going to be talking about today is a return to the good old days. Now, we weren't around for the 1930s, but our parents sure were. And it was funny when, older people talk about the good old days. We go back and look at, we were sliding from the Depression into World War II. But
Those were the good old days. Okay.
Yeah, so the fact of the matter is there's something that sucks about every era.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so at any rate, Lincoln is going to be returning to the good old days. They've already started that, and we'll talk a little bit about that
Abe?
In the show. No. Lincoln Motor Company. This, after all, is a car show. And Lincoln has finally realized the error of one of their ways that we've been talking about for years.
Are they going to come out with big, big Continental with the doors that open out from the wrong direction?
Close. But anyway, we'll talk about that as the show continues. But I guess we might as well start sliding into our little break so that drive-through radio can continue at our phone numbers, 437-5000 and 888-345-0790, here on AM 790.
Interesting.
Well, okay.
Oh, so much for self-driving cars, huh?
Oh, yeah. All right. Yes, as Brett has informed us, and we don't want this to happen with your car when it's driven by a computer, but our computer, our 1930s-era computer, crashed.
Crashed.
You just heard a little bit of, well, actually, it was FDR's theme song, but it is so associated with the 1930s. You know, I don't think of any political connotation to it. It's just that good old depression. But the reason we were playing that was that Lincoln has decided to call its next version of their bigger five-seat SUV the Nautilus. Instead of MKX.
Now, words.
Yes, you know.
Names.
Yeah. They never left Navigator. You know, they're big SUV.
Yeah, that's
they
true.
Always kept the name Navigator on it. And, you know, it worked for them, and they weren't going to mess with something that did work.
That doesn't mean they didn't mess with something that worked.
Well, when they replaced the MKS, which was their sedan, you know, and that's how I used to remember the names, all right? So there was the MKC crossover. That's the smaller crossover. The MKX. Crossover, yep. Right? And X is further up the alphabet. It's a slightly bigger car, right?
Mm-hmm.
MKT, the thing's a truck, you know. Yeah. And MKS, Sable or Sedan.
Yeah.
Because it was based on the same platform as the Taurus and Sable. But they've come to realize at the Lincoln Motor Company that these names, these alphas, they're not alphanumerics. They don't mean anything to anybody, and they just confuse people. It's an MKY.
Yeah. That really messes things up. I think they were all trying to go for the Mercedes-Benz aura of their the way they've Mercedes-Benz has pretty much always named their cars, because back during the 30s they were numbering their cars.
Yeah, but I mean they weren't the only ones. The funny thing is
Packard did too, and that was confusing as all.
Yeah, well, the 120 was a smaller car than the Packard 150, for example. But now the funny thing is, Oldsmobile in the modern era was still using the naming convention that they had from. It would really be the 1940s, because my 39 was a G70 series, I believe. The bigger car was the 80 series. Sometime around 40, 41, they started with the 80s and the 90s. They even had a 70. But after the war, the Olds 88 caught on so well with its V8 that Oldsmobile kept that name.
Yeah, but, you know, Chevrolet sold back in the 30s more Standards and Masters than the G whatevers.
Yeah, although one of the first successful Chevys was called the 490, but you know why they called it that?
$490.
That was the price of the car. Yeah, that was in the 1920s, the early 1920s. Mm-hmm. But the Lincoln had some nice cars that had names, and one of the more successful Lincolns in the 1930s was the V12 Lincoln Zephyr.
Mm-hmm.
And you might recall that Lincoln had a car called the MKZ.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and in fact, that was, I think that's still on the showroom floor, and I always remembered what it was because for a year it was the Lincoln Zephyr, and then they started the silly MK whatever stuff, and they called it the MKZ. So, at any rate, the original Lincoln Zephyr from the 30s, in 39, Edsel Ford had one of the Ford stylists with whom he worked together especially well, Bob Gregory, design a special car for him, a one-off that he called the Continental. And that one-off Continental, which he had shipped to Palm Beach, where he would spend his winter vacation, was such a hit with his neighbors, they all wanted to buy one, that he was no dummy. He said, all right, we'll put this thing into production. And that's where the Lincoln Continental got its start. So it was based on the Zephyr. So anyway, within the last roughly year, it was a little longer than that, Lincoln came up with a replacement for the MKS, which they called the Continental. They brought back the name, and they also brought back a new look, or brought a new look. They came up with a specific styled grill that, you know, kind of identified the car as a Lincoln, starting with this. They're saying this is going to be the new face of Lincoln. And sure enough, the new models have had it too, you know, an adaptation of it. And that's caught on. Say, Brett, I'm just wondering, are any signs of life out of that old computer now?
Got it back up, yep.
All right, good work. Well, you know what? Let's give this another try, returning to the good old days. And there we go. Good work.
Believe that names are really critical to our story, and so over time, throughout the next many years, we'll continue with new vehicles to try and find the right names that fit them.
I'm going to put in a vote for one that you didn't give enough time to when it returned, and that's the vehicle that the original Continental was designed off of. Bob Gregory designed a car for Edsel Ford based on the Lincoln Zephyr. He called it the Continental. The rest is history. So you got MKZ for, I know what the Z stands for.
Yeah.
Might that come back?
Well, we haven't decided on any future names.
Yeah, so they're thinking about that. They've taken it under advisement. But the fact of the matter is, at least they figured out one of the things that they'd been doing wrong. And the interesting thing is that people have reviewed some of their cars lately, seem to have liked them. So
good.
So I guess they're doing other things right. But I wanted to get back to the new Nautilus. And the fact is that when I was talking with Megan McKenzie, who is the crossover vehicle marketing manager for Lincoln Motor Company, she said they put some thought into coming up with the name Nautilus.
Really love the name Nautilus for this vehicle because it kind of goes along in line with the spirit of adventure and exploration of the customers who are buying this. And, you know, Nautilus or Nautis is the Latin, you know, old Latin root of a word that means sailor. And so that's kind of what inspired us to use this word. And yeah, like you said, with Continental and Navigator and Nautilus now, they're all words that kind of invoke this feeling of journey and exploration and discovery of the world.
So, yeah, they're giving it some thought. Now, I was thinking
Parkwin at the Yacht Club.
Well, there you go. Now, as far as other names from Lincoln's past, Capri might work.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing as how it's an island, well, it's Capri, you know, off the
close
Italian
enough,
coast.
Yes,
yeah,
yeah.
And another one they had, Cosmopolitan. There's a, you know, a person of the world, right? So that might fit. I don't know about Premier, which was another Lincoln name through the years, but I don't know that that necessarily, I guess it evokes the spirit of travel in that in some countries they have premieres.
Or you being know. Like a number one. Or
well, that's where it, yeah, I think it came from. So at any rate, there's that. But now the one other thing is that Megan also wanted to make sure that we realized that the new Nautilus isn't just an MKX with a Connie grill on it.
We are launching with the 19 Nautilus, a new 2-liter powertrain. So this vehicle will have a turbocharged and a twin turbocharged powertrain. So the base powertrain is the 2-liter, and that's going to get 250 horsepower and about 275 pound-feet of torque. And then the 2.7-liter is very similar to the powertrain that we've used in the past, and it gets a whopping 380 pound-feet of torque. So
I actually kind of cut that badly, but anyway.
So the new Nautilus, I'm guessing, doesn't float?
No, evidently not. Now, it's going to be coming out, you know, coming out next spring.
Okay.
All right. She pointed out that there's some other goodies in it, too. They're coming up with more and more technologies that make you feel redundant. You don't really need to be there, you know, in command, at the helm, I guess is the word. Actually, you do, but they're supposed to take some of the driving load off you so that you can spend more time, I suppose, looking at your phone like you're not supposed to do. But at any rate.
Yeah.
But actually, as you can see, they're moving into the modern era, and our happy days are here again.
Oh, okay. Speaking of older times and things like that, as you probably everybody has heard, Jim Nabors passed away this week.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jim was an accomplished actor playing a dope, and he had a great voice, too. But the thing that I want to bring up has something to do with one of the characters he played. And that
would be Gomer Pyle.
Yeah, Gomer Pyle when he was in, I guess, Mayberry.
When he was the popular mechanic in Mayberry, yes.
And I really don't like that stereotype of the biggest idiot in town.
Yeah.
is the only mechanic in town.
Right.
And that always struck me as why people get one of the reasons why people get poor service when they go to get their car fixed, because so many other people have taken somebody who isn't too bright and say, oh, he's good with his hands, he should be a mechanic.
Right.
And believe me, even in the 60s, if you needed to be, you needed to have a good head on your shoulder.
You needed smarts.
Yeah. You might not have had to be, you know, a PhD in physics to fix a car, but you had to have brains, and you had to know how to think.
Right.
And it's even worse today, or better today, I guess. You know, you have to learn how to know how to use computers, and you have to know how to think to diagnose problems. The computer doesn't do it all for you.
Well, you know, if you're talking about the person who works on your car as a mechanic, you are behind the times. The
term is
technician today, and it fits.
Yeah, it does.
Because it is so bloody technical.
That's not the problem.
Yeah, but you know, there's one other thing when you talk about Jim Nabors that's also an automotive reference. From, I think, 1972 until 3 years ago, with only a couple of years missed, he always sang Back Home Again in Indiana at the start of the Indy 500.
Yeah, for quite a while, yeah.
Yeah, so nice guy. By the way, a neighbor of ours, literally just up the street, was friends with him up here on Wampanoag Trail.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a bunch of pictures, of the two of them together over here in East Providence. How about that? Yeah. Well, he used to play at the tent occasionally.
Everybody used to play at the tent.
But you know, the funny thing is,
and
tell me who you're thinking of. Describe who you think.
The one who died in an operation.
That happens a lot. You got to narrow that down.
Joan Rivers, she said the last time I saw her at the tent, at the un-air-conditioned
Warwick tent.
Musical theater. Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is that there seemed to be absolutely no connection between Gomer Pyle's voice and Jim Nabors' voice. Because usually you would only hear Jim Nabors singing. There weren't a lot of interviews with him, but I actually heard him talking with somebody. There was a clip that came up the other day, and you could see how his speaking voice, with just a little bit of a tweak, could become Gomer.
You know what? I was disappointed one day when I think it was on one of the TV shows, he actually sang, and he sang as Jim Nabors and not Gomer Pyle.
You wanted to hear Gomer singing.
Yeah.
Well, there's one other actor, and I know we have to go to the break in a sec here, but another actor you may not necessarily think of as a great singer who was, and that was Fred Gwynne.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, there was one Car 54 episode.
Herman Munster sang.
Yeah. And there was a Car 54 episode where the cops from the 53rd Precinct won a barbershop quartet singing contest.
Okay.
And that's where you got to hear his real voice. And the guy was good.
Yeah. And Jerry Orbach was another
fantastic
surprise.
Yeah. Well, he had a good speaking voice. And, you know, so did Fred Gwynne. In fact, the announcer that said, you know, brought to you by Gleam with GL70, that was Fred Gwynne.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, we're going to take a break right now here on Memory Lane and Drive Through Radio. We'll continue in a moment here on AM 790.
Don't do that, get your reason.
why bother reading the signs? They're only going to confuse you anyway as you're going along 295.
Well, that's true. Actually, I drove down 295 and I looked at the exit signs and the new exit signs, and I'm going like, gee, that was absolutely no help than the old signs.
Yeah, well, the thing is, they're really for everybody else. There's not, so many of us in Rhode Island just don't bother with exit numbers, you know.
Well, I don't think we really do, because I'm not big on numbers for things. For example, after a while, when you start talking about names of streets in places like New York City and Miami, mm-hmm. and wherever else, they just name them by number.
Yeah.
You know, it starts to mean nothing.
Yeah, well, just for example, and I don't really know too many of the...
like car names?
No, I'm thinking exit streets that have their own exits in New York. But let's say you wanted to get off at 57th, and that's exit 12. I mean, yeah, which wouldn't be, actually. If you're coming from New Jersey, it's pretty close to the line. It would probably be either near the top, you know, the high number or low numbers. It'd be at one of the ends. But...
Well, you know, I've
my chair just collapsed.
Since this stuff has started, though, I pretty much, you know, people from out of town are blindly following the robot. So the big excuse is, so they know how far it is to the next exit. Hey, two things. One is they can't do the math in their head without their calculator while they're driving. Yeah. And number two is the GPS tells them how far to the exit they want.
Well, yeah, but that's assuming your GPS is up to date.
So anyway, this week, so for the first time this week, I heard one of the traffic reporters talking about an accident out on the highway, 295, of course.
Yeah.
And they said it was between, I'm just making up the actual number,
mm-hmm.
but the story remains the same. And the accident is between exit 10A and B and 11A and B, and old exit, and that would be old exit number 22 A and B and 23 A and B. And this is what I heard.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, you know, for how long are we going to have to hear this?
But yeah, I think that's a mistake. You know, one thing you need to remember when it comes to being on the air is to consider who your audience is. And the Rhode Island audience is the exit numbers, it doesn't really mean that much. But again, this
how
was
much
part of,
did they spend?
I know. But this was part of the Interstate Highway Program. And again, the idea that makes sense is if you name the or if you number the exit ramps for where they are in the mileage that you've traveled down the interstate, if you go to add another new exit, you don't bust up the sequence, because if it's somewhere between exit 50 and exit 32, you might make it exit 41.
Yeah, and yeah. In Rhode Island,
where there's only 37 miles.
That's not...
And many exits are within the same mile.
Right. Downtown Providence, we're going to go really high up the alphabet, mm-hmm. and we'll be listening to that song again.
I suppose.
But lots of times in the history of Rhode Island law, I'll say, mm-hmm. they'll pass a law that was passed in Massachusetts. They'll copy Massachusetts.
Well,
I wish they'd do it this time.
Because Mass hasn't done it.
And Mass said, we're going to give it further study,
yeah. Well, it's funny when you talk about that. I always remember one time when someone was kidding Governor Garrahy, and I'm not sure exactly which proposal it was. It may have been the bottle bill.
Yep.
And someone asked him if he was going to, you know, push for it, and he said, well, they're discussing it in Massachusetts right now. Let's see what they do. And somebody, it might have been Jack Kavanaugh from Channel mm-hmm. 10, was saying, well, Governor Garrahy has now appointed the largest study commission in the history of the state of Rhode Island. It's the state of Massachusetts. So anyway.
What I think, though,
That was at the old governor's roast, actually, that he mentioned that.
Massachusetts should do something that Rhode Island has done. And Rhode Island just didn't go and do it. It's always been this way since when they started it. They should get rid of their bottle bill in Massachusetts. They should no longer have deposit bottles on deposits on bottles.
Don't tell me you bought something in Mass and you had to pay the deposit on it.
Well, I have. I bought plenty of things that I had to. But Massachusetts got full recycling. There's no reason.
That's a good point.
That was before recycling that they put the deposits on the bottles and cans.
Right, and Rhode Island started the curbside recycling program. And,
instead of the
bottle bill.
Yeah, yeah, so now that they got all of that, just get rid of that. Yeah.
Hey, we were talking about numbers and miles and all of that stuff. We were? Yeah, yeah, with the exits. I took a picture of the odometer.
Who brought that up?
Yeah. Me. I took a picture of the odometer in the Flex as I pulled it into the parking lot this morning. It says 327 miles to E, with the actual mileage on the vehicle is 249,680.0. You know what that means?
It's cars going a long way.
Well, I could hit 250,000 miles on this tank full. Yeah, because actually, if I were to drive it at its current MPG, which is actually a little low for it because it had a lot of stop and go recently.
Yeah. So what's a good MPG on this?
Good MPG on it's probably like 21 or 22. And, you know, for a bus, that's pretty good.
It's true.
Yeah. Right now it's a little over 18. But let's say I were taking it down the road, you know, so the mileage would be climbing up into the 20s again, right? I'd go further than this. But at its current MPG, I would run out of gas at 250,007 miles. So this is the tank full that's going to take it over the top. I'm finally going to be besting 250,000 miles with a car.
You know, that sounds really, really good. Yeah. But the problem is when you're a little further away from that mileage, you hope that it goes that way, and you're not really sure that it will.
What do you mean?
Well, like my daughter's car's got 188,000 miles on it, and I hope it gets that.
She's hoping to hit a deuce.
Yeah, well, yeah. I am too.
Yeah.
Trouble-free, though.
Right.
And you see, you start to wonder when you get up there.
Yeah. Now, this car has been incredible. You know, it's only, you know, minor things.
Mm.
Knock on my head, you know.
Yeah, knock on wood.
Oh, wait a minute, this really is wood right here.
That part is just.
Say, I just want to point something out. Usually Adam reminds you that you can listen to podcasts of the show when you go to 790business.com. Well, today you'll be able to listen to podcasts of previous shows, but if you were with us at the beginning of the show, you may have noticed the computer died briefly.
Yeah,
so as a result, the usual technique that Brett uses to actually get the show up online isn't available to him. So this show will eventually be podcast, but probably not until sometime on Monday. So tell your friends.
You'll have to wait.
That is correct. All right. Hey, this is a good time, I suppose, to take a little break, and we'll be back right after this here on AM 790. Welcome back to Drive Through Radio. The phone numbers are 437-5000, 888-345-0790. If you get through in the next 5 minutes or so, we can talk with you if you've got any kind of a car care concern. And one of the things that can be a concern in caring for your car this time of year, because believe it or not, even though I guess it's in the 50s still for,
40s.
Upper 40s, I guess, yeah.
And this week it will hit the 50s, high 50s for 1 or 2 days, but it'll be rainy.
Yeah, but it is December, and you know what that means.
That means meteorological winter has arrived, and calendar winter will be coming soon.
Before you know it. So one of the things you need to keep in mind is the fact that your car has a cooling system. And, one of the problems that happens for cars when they get older is the fact that they require so much less maintenance than they used to that people forget about maintaining them at all.
Well, wait a minute. So let's say this correctly. Not as they get older, they require less maintenance. New cars get older.
That's what I'm saying. In other words, when you get a car, well, for example, like my car's an 09, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is, let's call it 9 years old. The 18s are out. In fact, mine's an early 09. It is 9 years old. So things, when I got the car, I am sure it had the original spark plugs, because the 100,000-mile spark plugs got turned into 200,000-mile spark plugs.
Yeah, I hope not, but anyway.
They did. That was the crazy thing is the guy who owned it was religious about oil changes and stuff like that, because it seems to be about the only car care service that people haven't forgotten. But one of the things you need to keep in mind is that despite the name that caught on in the 1950s, antifreeze is not permanent.
And I will tell you why it was called permanent.
Yeah, because
it did not boil off like the alcohol antifreeze, which came before it. It would boil. Alcohol boils at 160 degrees.
Right, and cars run hotter than that. So
correct.
The alcohol would boil off, and you would then wind up with freeze in your radiator.
Yes.
Yes. Current antifreeze will... The antifreeze protection is permanent. But unless you lose it, you add water, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Spring leak, that kind of thing.
Exactly. But the other protections that come with the antifreeze are not. The most important two really are the rust protection, so that you don't wind up with this scummy accumulation clogging up your radiator. Remember, mm-hmm. our first caller was talking about stuff in his Corvette's radiator? That happens when the coolant is not renewed for too long a period of time. And the other thing is there are lubricants for your water pump. And also worthwhile, like, for example, why I really think it's time for fresh antifreeze in my Ford Flex. When the water pump goes, you essentially have to dismantle the whole bloody engine.
Your Flex?
That's the one feature that I really don't like about the Ford 3.5.
You know what? It sounds like the guy who designed that designed the small block Ford V8, the 260, which had about 20 screws and bolts and studs holding the water pump on. I don't know why they thought it was going to fall off.
Yeah, I know, but at least you could get it. It was much easier to get to than the one in the 3.5.
Not for a Chevy mechanic.
No. You can get the whole thing off with four.
Right.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, all right, there were other things in the way, but the actual water pump attachment, four. Why do you think that engine's immortal, you know?
Well, right.
It's so easy to work on. But at any rate... The 3.5, durable engine, well-designed engine with that one exception. So, yeah, I don't want the water pump to go.
Right. So, and by the way, this maintenance might not stop the water pump from going. But anyway.
True.
It still should be done.
Yeah, because let's put it this way, not maintaining it is just going to ensure that at some date uncertain, but in the future, probably not too far, it will go.
But that's not the only problem.
Yeah.
You could have an overheating problem because of a clogged radiator.
Right.
Or a clogged cooling system in other places, like in the water jacket inside the engine.
Right.
Hoses probably wouldn't clog all that much, but there's another problem that could be caused by poor cooling system maintenance.
Yep.
And that is heater core plugging.
Oh, yeah. And it gets cold inside the car.
Yeah, the heat.
Or the heater core leaks. And in some cars, you can pull it out through the glove compartment. In other cars, you remove the entire dashboard.
Yeah, and
there labor costs get high up there.
Some vehicles, older vehicles, you could actually get them out from underneath the hood.
True.
Their little box.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's that many that are like that anymore.
Yeah.
And in any case, there's a job you don't want to do. But the job you do want to do is maintain your cooling system as prescribed by the car manufacturer. And that may include first draining, filling with clean water and a flushing agent,
right?
Flushing it out, dumping the flush out,
and then putting in
new fresh antifreeze.
Yeah.
Now, some people for years would just drain the radiator or pull a bottom radiator hose and drain as much out as possible. Mm-hmm. And then refill.
That doesn't get all the old stuff out.
And they go, but I couldn't get enough water and antifreeze in.
Yes.
It's because your block was
still full.
I
have a funny story about the first time I went to drain a block, and it might have been Pop's 53 Caddy.
Mm-hmm.
The plugs down at the bottom of the water jackets.
Right.
I always wound up putting petcocks in them so I could just service mine by unscrewing them. But I went and took the plugs out. Nothing came out. I'm going, did I take the right things out? Looking at it, mud. Okay, I got a bicycle spoke. And I pushed, and I pushed, and I pushed, and eventually I hit water, and it started to come out.
Yeah, that means that that was the first time that was done.
Well, let's see. Now, the 53 Caddy was the first car that I drove on my learner's permit. So that would have been 1966. It could have had 13-year-old coolant in it, I suppose.
Well, no, it just did nobody
well, first
ever
time
drained
the, core, the yeah.
Drained
the water jackets.
The water jackets or flushed it, because a lot of times if you flush on a regular basis, you don't need to drain it out of there to get the gook out.
Yeah.
But to get all the liquid out, you do.
Yeah. Yeah, and we wanted to get the liquid out and, frankly, get as much junk out as we could.
And today they have a process of actually flushing on a machine that will run all kinds of stuff
pressurized,
through there and clean out, you know, clean
kind of liquid
out.
Liquid scouring, you could say. Yeah,
take out the old antifreeze, clean it out, flush it, and refill with new, I'll say, either new or recycled antifreeze.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, that's going to do it for Drive-Thru Radio for this week. Coming up next week, we're going to talk a little bit about ride-sharing and why some of the car companies are getting behind it, because they don't want to be left behind. All right, that's one of the reasons,
And maybe it's not that good news
for them. I learned a funny story about one of our cars that maybe we'll talk about on the show, a car we used to own. Car had quite a history.
Not me.
Well, the family. It was in the family. Anyway, Brett Ferruccio, thanks for driving the bus. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check your mirrors and signal your turns. Adam will be back eventually, but John and I will see you next week. Ciao.